Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Matson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Today we got a special edition of Fake News. That is Hans Zimmer, who wrote that theme song for us. A lot of people still don't understand how much we paid him for that. The licensing of that song.
Is he still alive?
I believe so. He was at Coachella 2 years ago, rocked it, tore the place down.
Wait, Hans Zimmer was at Coachella. Why?
Oh, dude, he played his full catalog of scores, and people went nuts. Imagine seeing Hans Zimmer's scores
on drugs. Yeah, it'd be fun.
Greatest thing of all time.
It's like, I mean, that's pretty much what it's like going to a fucking rave anyways, right?
Yeah, that's great. Imagine if Hans Zimmer was there. That'd be the first person I'd see. Throw Rage Against the Machine.
Well, you couldn't pick Hans Zimmer out of a lineup.
No, but as soon as he played that the Matrix theme, I'm all in.
Yeah,
You know, all of it. We get a special guest today.
We do.
on the fake news segment. We never do this, but this is special. Who do we got here today?
We have Sagar Nyeti, and the reason we've had to do this is because he's been ducking us for weeks now.
You've been ducking us, fool.
I've got COVID. Oh, I'm fucking whatever.
What did you have? Are you okay? Are you physically okay, Sagar?
I'm all good. I'm all good, guys. Yeah. Thank you for your concern. I got COVID. It sucked. I had the breakthrough case or whatever. I still got pretty sick though. I was down for the count for like 3 days.
Really?
And then I was pretty much, yeah. So it was like, well, it was had like you, 3 full days.
Was this the first time you've had it?
First time.
Yeah. So it's not that surprising, because if you had one of the original vaxes, it only covers really that spike protein in a real way. So. But that makes sense. Now you're good, though. You're vaccinated against
totally
the good general virus, plus you have like a wide Even the Delta has even a wider berth of
I was
natural
reading
immunity.
That if you have, yeah, if you have breakthrough plus vaccine, you have like super immunity. Yeah. So now I'm like, I truly don't give a fuck.
No, it's you against the world at this point. Dan and I were lucky. We got it opening day. We were at COVID.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we were at COVID opening day in March of like literally whenever, where it was one of those things where we looked at each other and we're like, hey, is this that thing they're talking about on the news? Because I feel like we've got all the symptoms for it. We were like, dude. And then everything shut down the next day. And we were like, yes, dude. Now we're above the law. You feel like above the law. Now you're good. You can fight crime or go to concerts or do whatever you want. You're good to go.
Licking doorknobs in public and shit.
Yes.
Why not?
Yes. It's all about you.
This is America.
It is. Speaking of America, with a lot going on in America today, I'd love to chat with you about the California recall, because that's on Tuesday. That's coming up. I saw this attack against Larry Elder last night. That was strange and disturbing all at the same time, and then it didn't get any news coverage whatsoever. If this would have happened to a Democrat, if Larry Elder was a black Democrat, BLM would have been out there. It would have been chaos in the streets. Instead, this was barely a blip on the radar last night.
Yeah, it's really terrible. I mean, what they had that entire fake story that even the Washington Post wrote up about some guy who like supposedly screamed the N-word at a baseball game. You remember that?
Yeah.
It went so viral. And it turned out it wasn't that at all. And this was like an actual no shit attack. I mean, look, it's terrible. Every single time you see something like this happen to any elected, you know, representative or whatever. I remember when they were milkshaking people for a long time back in the day. And I remember just being like, this is not going to end well, you know, and then Portland would happen. And then Andy Ngo got like hit in the head by like a fake milkshake, which was concrete, full of concrete. Yeah. And it was like, oh, OK, like, you know, and that's the thing is they don't denounce these things in the moment. And look, I do think overall that the attacks on Elder, the fact that Obama himself had to cut an ad, that Biden is going out there, Kamala, they like let her out of the cave in order to go and do something. That's a big deal because, look, I mean, polls, I just don't know. Honestly, after 2020, I basically add anywhere between like 4 to 7 points for a Republican just because I don't think they can possibly poll Republicans, especially in the Trump era. I don't know why it seems to be that way, but it just is. And I think things are a lot closer in California than the media is letting on. And look, I honestly hope that Newsom gets recalled. I think he's a terrible governor.
Yep.
But really what it is, it would be a Brexit style event, you know, because here's the thing. Like we live, like at least where I live, like in the East Coast, DC, New York media, everybody's obsessed with themselves. Like that's why the Cuomo story was so much bigger than what's happening out in California with Gavin Newsom. But Newsom is a governor for what? Like 43 million people. Like, California, if it was his own country, would be it's in the G7. It's a massive economy. So if he gets recalled, it will be one of the biggest stories of Paul. It will be like up there with Brexit, Trump's election. Like, I don't know what exactly it previews, but it's previewing something.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Because I mean, when you're calling in Obama, Biden and Kamala for a governor of a state.
Right.
I mean, I can't remember somebody campaigning this hard for.
Yeah, I don't think. Who would have been the top repube in 2012? I guess Romney ran for president that year, right?
He did. Right.
But he didn't come to.
And nobody wanted Bush around.
He didn't come. I don't remember him coming. I don't think Romney ever came to Wisconsin to help Scott Walker. And to be fair, maybe
because Walker ran against him, I think, in the primaries. There was also some beef.
Well, he did. But Walker also got recalled for Act 10, which was legislation written by Citizens, the whole Citizens United group.
That's right.
So, I mean, it was the Koch brothers. This is a really good thing for America. Have a couple of fucking mercenaries, basically, right? Mm-hmm. They don't give a fuck where they make their money. Right, model legislation, hand it off to politicians who pretend like it's good for people.
Right,
that's probably good, right?
Yeah. My God. Yeah,
that's like having George, you know, George Soros has pumped $1 million into this Gavin Newsom recall thing. Why?
Oh, yeah, man.
Somebody tell me why he's done that. I'm tired of hearing that George Soros is a myth, like this Jerry Nadler fuckface saying that Antifa is a myth. I'm tired of hearing it.
Well, yeah,
this guy's spending millions of dollars in our economy on judges in the fucking California recall election. Why? What the fuck?
And we call it on both sides. Same with the Koch brothers, mm-hmm. right? Like, they do the same thing as Soros does, but you don't really hear that much about Soros. Mm. And when you do, it seems like they treat it like it's a myth, or, oh, that's a conspiracy of this person. It's
even like, though this video of the guy saying it would be like a big accomplishment to take down America. He says that, then he does this, and people are like, oh, I don't understand why, man. I don't get it. Like, Jesus.
What's
I
your...
mean, the name of his thing is Open Societies Foundation. Yeah. So I'm already pretty skeptical.
Yeah, I know. What's your gut telling you for next Tuesday? Who do you got in this?
I think he's probably going to win. And the system is just like, when you pull out all the stops and the honestly, I think Elder peaked too early. I was just looking at the polls. It was actually neck and neck like 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it was within the margin. And so if I see within the margin, I'm like, oh, he's getting recalled, like I said, because of the plus floor, plus seven. But the problem is I think they're going to shock enough normie Dems into being like, do we really want a Republican as governor? That's the issue, right? So it's like, I think they're so tribal. And the moment what they've also started calling him is like radical Larry Elder, who's tied to Donald Trump, right? Yeah, so like they'll use like the Trump, the mask or whatever, and trying to gaslight.
They call him the black face of white supremacy.
I know. Yeah.
I know. Which is a pretty,
that shit works.
That's a pretty clever statement. Works. That's a pretty clever statement too. The black face of white supremacy, because you sneak the phrase black face in there, which let's be real, we all miss it.
Yeah. Right? Jesus Christ. They slipped that in there, the black Donald Trump, you name it, they've said it. Right. I'm with you on this. I think I've got, because we are gambling on the show. Guess what? I've got Newsom by 4, and I don't really miss in these things. So unfortunately, but I have it for plus 4 for a different reason. They mailed out ballots to every single registered voter, which is...
That's a part of it, too.
Yes, yep. And that's the first time that has ever happened in something like this. So even if you were lazy, didn't left the house, you know, you're one of those guys that wears the mask while you're inside your own car driving around, you're still going to see that ballot in your mailbox and think, I'm bored. I guess I'll mail it in.
The unfortunate part about this is states have an extreme amount of latitude in deciding how they fucking run their elections, not just for their governor or their fucking state representatives, but for president, right?
Yep.
As long as you're not intentionally boxing people out, there isn't really a mechanism for keeping people, for keeping illegal people from people who aren't supposed to be voting from voting. Like, right. if you try to pass some legislation that prevents, whether intentionally or unintentionally, a certain group of people from voting that have the right to, that's, you can take care of that in the courts all day long. But if you allow people who aren't supposed to be voting to vote, there's no case law for that.
Right.
Right. And there's nothing in the Constitution about it specifically.
Yeah.
The states can do whatever the fuck they want. So California could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, they could come back. It's turning into Iraq over there. Remember when Saddam Hussein used to have elections and it was 98% voted for him. Like, really? 98.
Yeah.
2% of people fucking didn't vote for this guy. You fucking kidding me?
Seems legit.
Like, you should have made it like 65-35, and I would have believed that. But not.
Yeah, that's the problem with California, right? Is it's a total uniparty state. And even the way that they have the primaries and everything is total bullshit, because it just makes it so that it's a centrist Democrat versus a progressive. So it actually screws everybody. It screws the progressive who can't run in a primary against the actual Democrat. And it screws the Republican because they can't really go statewide. That's why Arnold was really the last person, because he had the celeb power to use the recall and actually, number one, get Gray Davis recalled. Number two, actually get himself, I forget what percent of the vote, I think he won like 27% of the vote, something like that, to actually become the governor. But they have the system basically totally rigged out there. And recall is basically the best bet for a Republican to actually come into office. So look, I mean, look, I would love to see it. I mean, I really, really would. But my gut just tells me the ballots, plus the polling, plus the scaremongering against, like, you know, Larry Elder tied to Donald Trump. I don't know. You know, I was thinking about it. How long did it take for New York City to go to shit before they elected Giuliani? It was like 10 years.
Yeah. You know? 10 years of the worst crime. It was their peak crime was worse than Detroit or L.A., right?
So, oh, yeah. And I lived in both, by the way, right before they got cleaned up. So I was at NYU right before Giuliani got in there. And, like, dude, it was sketchy as shit where you were just like...
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
Before he and Bernie Kerik, like, kidnapped all the bums and threw them into the ocean or something. I don't know where they went, but they weren't there anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't want to go to Midtown because there was still the hookers and the peep shows and all that other shit. Yeah. The warehouse district
that was weird.
Literally empty warehouses with people shooting up. And you were like, don't go down there. And then there was... So I lived in LA during the recall. First of all, you're correct on that. Schwarzenegger got Hollywood because he kept production there.
Yeah.
So he said, look, even though I'm running as Republican, I will keep all of your productions and give you guys tax incentives to keep your productions here in LA.
Yeah,
so we won over all of Hollywood for
How funny is that, that a quasi-Republican offered tax breaks, which is a Republican move, to a bunch of lefties to keep them in town so he could win governor?
Yeah.
How fucking funny is that shit?
He did.
Like, no... This politics, whole man. This whole right versus left thing is a canard. It's all nonsense. People care about themselves. Yeah. That's it.
100%.
But even in LA, so let's take the LA for an example. There was a gap of time where they were cleaning it up, and it was really nice. And it was when Schwarzenegger was there, and you were like, all right, great. They moved the Oscars back to Hollywood. They were cleaning up Hollywood Boulevard, all that other stuff. And then it just dropped off a fucking cliff, man. And you're right. That decline started to happen. I noticed it right around 2015 where I was like, man, homeless are really taking over the city. What are we going to do? And then they were dropping off patients from the hospitals that were overrun and just dropping them off in the middle of the night downtown. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is getting bad. How bad does it have to get in order for you to change the policies, though, is my question.
I've been thinking about it a lot. I mean, here's the thing. My sister literally moved from San Francisco. Like, it is so dangerous. Like, right before the pandemic, I stayed at her place in a nice place. Mm-hmm. And I had to catch an Uber to go to the airport at like 4 a.m. And I step outside the door and there's a dude shooting up right there, like on her doorstep. You know, as an older sibling, you're like, I can't believe she has to live this way. Mm-hmm. But it was like that everywhere. I mean, you know, you see people shooting in their necks in broad daylight, like shitting in the street. It's all of the stereotypes are actually true. But like I said, it's been a semi-recent phenomenon. It's only really become legitimately unlivable, I would say, the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, you tell me. New York City had to have 10 years full of crime, full of people moving out to the suburbs and all that for there to actually be the break and say, okay, enough of this shit. And then the problem is that actually the more you nationalize it, the more it protects people who I think are disgusting, like Chesa Boudin and the LA district attorney, because they can be like, what, you're having some Trump person? And a lot of people will fall for that. So like, we have got to, the nationalization actually of these things is what will make it go on even longer, in my opinion. And risk, that's the worst part of it.
In risk management, that's called risk smoothing, by the way. You're taking a point of risk and you're smoothing it out over a larger area, and it diffuses the impact of any risk in any particular point. This is like social engineering shit, right? Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if they're smart enough but that is what is happening. And it's people are fucking stupid, man.
They are. But by the way, it really is the policies. I think New York is the perfect example of when Giuliani was in there, he cleaned it up. He left. Bloomberg was in there, who was a Democrat. It was still great. Like the policies he enacted, like it didn't really change for me throughout those years. And I lived there a couple times during both of them. So it didn't really change. And then after Bloomberg is when it went to shit with de Blasio and those guys. And I was like, Jesus, man. It's absolutely insane, but hey, if you want to live in it, I guess congratulations, live in it. You were saying your sister moved. Where did she move to? Just out of curiosity. Did she really? Why?
Cheaper rent, dude. It's marginally safer, right?
Not by much.
Yeah. I know.
It's like going from Giselle to Kate Upton. You're like, sweet. I got it. Well, which one? I was like, well, they're kind of.
I mean, to be fair, Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, is still 10 times safer.
Yeah.
I agree. Downtown San Francisco. Certainly. I mean, like, I remember hanging, I forget what that big park is in San Francisco. And it was like, you can't even sit down, man. Like, you're just getting constantly harassed for drugs, booze, or whatever. It was crazy. It was right before the pandemic, too. I'm going back soon. I'm curious to see what it looks like.
Dolores Park, right? The big one with
it stretches out across.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that it was. It's been like that. I lived in Oakland from like 2011 until 2017, and I worked for the federal government in San Francisco, so I was over there a lot. It was like that. You saw a little bit of that. The Tenderloin was completely fucked back then. It's way worse now, but it was fucked back then. What was it? Hunter's Beach. or whatever. Oh, yeah. On the like to the west side of the baseball stadium. You can't even go over there, like at all. I was helping with a security company back there, do risk management for businesses that operate in the area. And my advice was to leave.
Yeah.
But now it's way worse. They're paying people what, $85,000 a year to come scoop human shit up off the ground.
Yeah.
That's not a bad job. But people aren't going to take it. Chick-fil-A put out a fucking press release. They said they're having trouble hiring people. They're having to close stores because they can't hire people. These little teenage Christians aren't working. We're fucked.
Yeah.
They were the only people left.
You don't deny me a God's chicken, dude. Even at my Chick-fil-A by my house.
Seriously, if you were
worried. I can't eat inside. They were like, we don't have enough workers. I'm like, that's God's chicken.
If you were worried about
I think that's bullshit. I have one theory on this McDonald's and Chick-fil-A's not opening inside. I'm like, you just don't want to clean it anymore. I'm like, that's what's happening.
Well, to be fair, they weren't really cleaning it in the first place, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Let's be real.
It's like, they just realized they can make just as much money when everybody will come in and out.
Do you know how they clean the floors at these fast food places? At the end of the night, the mop water they've been using the whole time, they just dump it out on the floor, mop it around to soak it all up, and then leave.
Oh, God.
That's how that works. So congratulations. We're all so fucking gross. Pigs. We're all disgusting pigs. But that's fine.
Let's pivot to the Middle East. Dan, you were telling me right before we went on air that 200 Americans just got out of there.
Yep.
I believe you said there Biden was prepared to drop off a pallet of cash.
No, this has been going on for a long time, actually. One of our agreements with the Afghan interim government, and I say interim because it was never real. It was interim from the time we fucking made one until now.
17-year interim government.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. that government, one of the agreements we made was, hey, part of the Afghan National Army's job and part of your job is to stop the heroin trade or at least cut down on it so they can't make the money that they usually make because that's their number one export. And we're not mining lithium because everybody's getting blown the fuck up. So we were sending them pallets of cash. Evan can tell you about all this stuff. When he was working for the agency, pallets of cash at a time show up to these places to fund their government. We did it again. I told you yesterday in 2006 when Hamas won the fucking Palestinian elections, we had to do it then too. We had sent money through Qatar to Palestine because they didn't have any export. They couldn't make money. And it was either that or they all die. Right. And in this case, we're going to keep doing the same thing. Now we're going to be giving money directly to the Taliban, who, as I've mentioned, are currently escorting Amin al-Haq around the fucking country, who is the former security director for Al-Qaeda. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, it's a mess. How do you think this is all going to shake out over there, Sagar?
You know, man, I've been black-pilled on Afghanistan for a really long time. And I'm of so many minds about it. I mean, look, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's like, okay, well, why were we there in the first place? And I tried to take a very holistic view of it. And you're very right to point to the fact that it was a fake government from the beginning, that we were literally the only legitimate institution that was propping it up. It had no legitimacy amongst the people, basically, like whatsoever for the last at least 10 years. And it's just, I don't like what. Trying to solve that problem, I just don't know. And we spent, what, $100 billion on the Afghan National Security Forces? I think $89 billion overall. And collapsed in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Three straight weeks. I mean, I used to cover all these stories back. My original beat was Pentagon. And so I did a lot of reporting about this. I'm sure you guys will remember this, that I think he was a Green Beret who was forced out of the, they tried to force him out because he reported some sexual molestation that was going on.
Yeah, that was, and actually, he ended up beating the Christ out of somebody, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he beat the hell out of him, but then they tried to punish him because he saw him molesting a kid. And then I remember this because I tried for over a year to get my hands on this report. The Obama administration was hiding a report that was commissioned by Congress on the prevalence of sexual, basically pedophilia within the Afghan National Security Forces. And the Pentagon kept that thing classified for over a year. And the only reason it ever even leaked out is that a friendly congressman like finally got it out into the media. But everybody knew what was in there. And I covered the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan for so many years. And it was like every year the Pentagon would classify the number of Afghan dead because they didn't want people to know how bad the war was going. It was like every single thing. And it was totally bipartisan. Happened under Obama. It happened under Trump. It's like the structural, honestly, fuckery that was just happening all the way back from at least 2002 just made it so it's just, like you said, yeah, am I outraged the Taliban are escorting this Al Qaeda guy around? Yeah, but honestly, I do not know what the alternative to just getting the hell out actually is. And I know there's a lot that's very controversial and statement in there. We could talk about light footprint and all that, but honestly, like light footprint, what does that mean? We were doing light footprint before the peace deal. I think we lost 40 service members, I believe, just under Trump with the so-called light footprint strategy. I mean, who knows how many thousand servicemen and women died under Obama. It's just like sending people over there to fight for a government that just didn't want to fight for itself.
Right.
I'm just completely against that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very complex issue. Obviously, I think there, you could make the argument, well, first of all, a light footprint would never work because there are too many convergent interests in that country, right? There's obviously the radical fundamentalist bullshit, but far more dangerous than that is Russia and China and the fucking $150 billion oil pipeline that they want to build and the fucking $2 trillion or so worth of rare earth minerals under the ground. There's no way 7,500 fucking even operators are going to be able to hold that country for that long because all China and Russia are going to do is run information operation campaigns, reverse Mujahideen us, that is to say, fund terrorists in Afghanistan to disrupt us, to break our will and make us leave so they can do it anyways. So you either have to go in there and lock that fucking country down. If it's all for minerals, just say so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To be honest,
yeah, I agree.
If you tell the average American service member, hey, you know what? Russia and China, these people who fucking murder Uyghur Muslims just for existing and these people who fucking throw gay people off rooftops and shit like that and mutilate their genitals, they want to go in here and take the most important natural resources on earth and we're going to go fucking stop them. I'd be fine with that. Frankly, fuck China and fuck Russia. But that's not what we do. We try to make up some false moralistic cause like, oh, these people need our help. Yeah. The only person that needs your help is somebody that wants it. And if you don't believe that shit, go find a fucking drug addict and try and change them because you're not going to do it until they're ready.
Right.
And these people are not fucking ready for that shit.
So you're saying when you were there, if your colonel or whoever hits
it. We didn't need anybody to tell us that because we knew exactly why we were there. We were there because Dick Cheney made a bunch of shit up. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he just made a bunch of shit up like, hey, you know what we could do is fucking. And it, maybe he didn't consciously make that decision. Maybe it's just confirmation bias. I'm in the defense industry. If these wars happen, you know, I'm going to make a fuck ton of money on this side. I'm in the defense industry, so I'm naturally geared towards being a bit hawkish anyways. So these two things come together, and all of a sudden, you have an ideology that exists outside of yourself. I mean, it is fundamentalism, basically, and that drives everything you do. And he was able to weasel his way into power, right? Because it takes a lot of money to get elected these days. I don't know how much money was spent in 2020, but the one before that was like $4 billion, right? If you include the PACs.
I
think it was even more.
Yeah,
I think it was even more.
In 16, I think it was four something billion. If you include all the PACs, the super PACs and shit, it had to have been more in 2020. It had to,
right?
Like just because of inflation. So,
yeah, there's actually a fascinating documentary that just popped up on Netflix this week about 9/11. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it yet. I think I'm maybe four.
Is it the multi-part series?
Correct.
Or is it that?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't watched it yet.
I'm four parts in right now.
No spoilers.
No spoilers on what happened. But it goes back to, you know, I would say 1980-ish of when Russia invaded Afghanistan and then they got him out of there and everything else. And then all the way up through now and today. And the fascinating part about it is they do chat with everybody who was involved except for Bush, essentially. Like Andrew Card was in there. Andy Card, and like he went through step by step, word for word, what was said in the war room, in the classroom, you know, all of it, all the way through. And it's a fascinating look at it from behind the scenes. But one of the most fascinating things that I found in, like, I think it was part three, was they said when they looked at the country overall and they were trying to decide what to do and how to strike and all that other stuff, they knew the Taliban forces occupied 90% of the country, and then 10% was the northern tip of.
Northern Alliance.
Right. Yeah. And I know this might be controversial, but I said this to my wife last night. I go, what I don't understand is if you knew that 90% of it was occupied by the Taliban and we had just got struck bad, and it was, you know, the worst attack in our history next to probably Pearl Harbor, why didn't you just drop a nuclear bomb? But in all sincerity,
because
who would have been against that?
The Taliban doesn't live in a fucking Taliban compound. They live right next to the fucking women and children and non-Taliban and anybody else. There are a lot of compromised people over there that are compromised through no fault of their own. And you can't just murder all of them, right?
But didn't that happen in Japan?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't have the precision bombing capability that we have now. That was the argument for the atomic bomb.
Well, right? I mean,
we were like, look,
our precision.
I actually just listened to a whole book on that.
Oh, you did?
By Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, the Bomber Mafia. Yeah,
Bomber Mafia. Great book.
We had him on to talk about it. Yeah, it was it's a really,
oh man, very good. Huge fan of Malcolm.
Yeah, it was
same. You know, great guy.
It's interesting, just kind of what you're getting at. It's like, and I'm curious for your guys' view, and especially you know when you serve in the service, it's like. I still think the original sin was just not throwing everything we had at the Battle of Tora Bora and just going and look, we probably would have lost some people, but it would have been worth it. Like, in my opinion, we went in to get bin Laden. We should have gone in and we should have fucking killed him. And then we should have left.
I'm glad
none of this Karzai nonsense. Yeah. Like, that is where it all just completely went wrong.
I'm glad you brought that up because they said that in the documentary. Yeah. They knew where he was. Oh, no, Dan, you can confirm this, but like they said they knew where he was and they couldn't understand why they just didn't go all in on this one mission exactly like you're talking about.
Right. Because for the same reason that nobody fucking makes a cure for cancer. They make a treatment for it, motherfucker, because there's no money in executing a plan and then going the fuck home. That's why. Can we stop pretending like that is not always the fucking answer to every one of these questions?
That's exactly what they alluded to in the documentary. And it makes perfect sense because they were like, all right, great. Well, then who stood to benefit from that? And clearly, they obviously thought it was going to be us.
Eisenhower warned us about this bullshit in the 1950s. And it didn't take 25 fucking years for the military industrial complex, not just to stand up, but to take control of DC. I mean, like fucking this, dude. And it was just the Cold War then. I mean, Korea a little bit towards the tail end is where it started.
Yeah.
After Korea, we were like, fuck, we may have to go fight bigger wars somewhere. We need, like, the U.S. didn't have a standing army before World War One like that. We didn't just have, like, people now, all you guys are in the military. That wasn't a thing back then. When we needed people to fight, we fucking rounded people up, trained them, and went and fought.
Right.
Right? That's just how it was. That's why there was a draft back then. Now, maybe there's something to be said about that, but, or at least... some kind. I think we should have compulsory civil service, not military service. But anyways, just to teach people
like Israel?
Some responsibility. No, not like Israel. The way Israel does it is a fucking caste system. If you know somebody or your parents are in the government, you don't have to do shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you get to be like the computer guy. It's fortunate. I actually know some of these people. Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's Fortunate Son. They play that shit out. That song, Fortunate Son, is exactly what it is. But imagine how lethal the United States would be if we did exactly what you guys are talking about in Tora Bora. We send it in special operations. They wipe this organization completely off the face of the earth and then just go home and leave people to figure it out. You know what I mean?
Right.
That would be, it's a good analog for medicine, like cutting out a tumor and then letting your natural fucking immunity and system regenerate, right? That's what your body is made to do that. And human beings are wired to be civil together in some way. Even if there's some kind of hierarchical power structure, they will come together and figure out a system of government, right? Mm-hmm. It'll either be based on power or influence or sometimes ideology, but it'll be based on something. And you can't influence that from the outside any more than you can put an organ from your body into mine if they don't match. It just does not fucking work that way. And we continue, despite our best efforts, to convince these people to stop doing this shit. So it can't be, it's not logic, it's not belief that's driving it. It has to be money and power. That's all that's left.
Sagar, you got a podcast. You know we got some sponsors that pay for the show to be on the air. First and foremost is GhostBed.com/drinking bros. Look, kids, the IT department fell asleep at GhostBed.com/drinking bros. They left up the Labor Day sale. 40% off the bundle packages with the adjustable base. So what you do is you get that base, and then you get the mattress, and then you can bundle whatever else you want with it. Their pillows, sheets, whatever. Combine them, and then congratulations, you get 40% off. Or you can use the promo code DRINKINBROS at checkout and get 30% off anything in the entire store, which is nice. And that's just individual stuff. So let's just say you just want the sheets or you just want their amazing pillows. Congratulations, you're going to get 30% off. Or the mattress. They've also got the mattress deal right now with a mattress and two free pillows. So when you buy that mattress, you get two free pillows. $100 and whatever dollar savings. It's amazing. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and hop on that deal. Also, with the 36-month pay-as-you-go program, no interest there if you have decent credits. You can combine all of those deals that I just mentioned into that and walk out of there with amazing, amazing savings. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. And look, dude, use that 36-month pay-as-you-go program. It's like $35 to $38 a month for a brand new bedroom set. Next up, fire up the tailgate, kids. Tonight, the NFL is back. Get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And with the NFL returning, DraftKings has given new customers $200 in free bets instantly. That is $200 in free bets instantly when you bet $1 or more on any football game. Listen up. You don't want to miss this. Head over to DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 or more on any week one game to receive $200 in free bets instantly. If Sportsbook is not yet available in your state, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contests. And for week one, DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at a $1 million top prize. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching a game quite like having a free shot at a $1 million top prize. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code BROS to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game this weekend, and get a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's promo code BROS this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and a $1 wager required, one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Next up, D'Anthony. We got a little bit of Cardo Max, brother. Look. There's a reason why daddy's all juiced up today. It's that Cardo Max, dog. That is CardoMax.com. If you're dragging through your days, ditch the cheap coffee and sugar-packed energy drinks for a Navy SEAL-approved source of energy. Cardo Max Energy Intensifier. Cardo Max Energy Intensifier uses the least amounts of ingredients as possible. There's absolutely no junk in there, dude. It's going to give you the energy you need, optimize your workouts. I'd love to use it for pre-workouts. It just gives you a fucking boost, or when we're doing like 90 shows a day. If you're dealing with the kids, some ungodly hour in the morning, whatever. Cardo Max will keep you going. It's owned and operated by former Navy SEAL and fellow drinking bro, Sean Mattson. Cardo Max Energy Intensifier comes in an easy-to-mix liquid packet in two great flavors, blue raspberry and pink lemonade. It's got B3, B6, B12 vitamins, caffeine, and BCAAs. It tastes great. All the ingredients are healthy, and it's made by a veteran and a drinking bro. That's why we love Cardo Max. When we need a clean, healthy pick-me-up, we go to CardoMax.com. And CardoMax.com is offering drinking bros an exclusive offer, 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. Use the promo code DB. That is CardoMax.com. Promo code DB, and you will get 30% off your next four orders. That is CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Last but not least, I'm going to be drinking a lot of this tonight on the live watch for the Buccaneers versus the Cowboys. That is firstleaf.com/drinkingbros. That is tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Wine of the Month Club. We often bring it into the studio. Dan and I love wine. We're huge fucking fans of it, and we've been members of this. Dan's been on it a lot longer than I have. I was skeptical, and then the first box came in the mail, and it was like all the best shit from all over the world, different countries. I got some from New Zealand. I got some from France. I even got some wine from Spain, and it was amazing, so I just kept getting it. You can swap out any bottle you want, you get this email as a reminder, right? That says, hey, dude, it's time. Your box of wine is coming. You get 6 or 12 bottles. You can also put it on pause on your subscription. Do whatever you want. But you can also swap out the bottles. So if you see one, you're like, maybe I didn't like that one from the last time as much as I like this other one. Congratulations, you can swap that in. It also allows you to keep your favorites and all that stuff. Gigantic fan of these guys. It has been a year and a half for me there, and I love it. And instead of like standing, you know, at the grocery store trying to pick out wine for a dinner party or a game or whatever it is you're going to, they'll just do it for you. Trust the professionals. Unlike big box wine memberships, firstleaf.com uses a one-of-a-kind algorithm and your feedback to curate future wine recommendations. The more wines you taste and review, the better shipments you get. I've got mine dialed in, and then I swap it out for the summer. So we went all white for the summer. We go red for the falls. We go white for the summer. Gigantic fan. Save time, money, and stress with First Leaf, the wine club designed with you in mind. Join today, and you'll get 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. That's 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Thanks, Sagar. And since we're dumping cash over there, Sagar, do you think there'll be another terror attack on U.S. soil because they're simply more funded now? Because that's what I wrestle with now of like, all right, we left there. Congratulations. We're probably, like Dan said, dumping money to them to get the last of our guys out of there. It feels like exactly what was happening in the 80s, and now we're back to that because it's still death to America all the way around. So what's to stop it from happening again?
It's possible. I'm skeptical, though. I think that the current generation of Taliban, these guys are both hardened Islamists and also uber capitalists. Like, one of the things that we forget is they're all multimillionaires, yeah, and they have these huge penthouses in Dubai. Like, the current leadership of the Taliban are some of the biggest drug dealers on the planet.
Yeah.
So I think they just want to protect their patronage in Afghanistan. Now, the problem is going to be if they have the same thing that happened back in the 1990s. The Taliban never really wanted to kill America. It was more like, oh, yeah, this guy, weird Saudi guy, Bin Laden, he lives here. He kind of helped us against the Russians, although he didn't actually do shit. So we allowed him to stay here.
He did some good photo ops, actually.
He's got crazy ideas. Yeah.
Like, seriously, he did.
Yeah, I know. He has these great. They talk about that. The Taliban guys thought he was a huge pussy.
Yeah.
They were like, they're like, this guy didn't do anything. You know? But I just don't think it's in their interest to allow something like that to happen, because obviously then we're going to have to reinvade, you know, cruise missiles or something like that. So I'm skeptical.
Look, I am too.
I mean, my thinking on this is, have you guys read Looming Tower by Lawrence? Actually, he lives in Austin.
Yeah.
He's Lawrence Wright, one of my all time favorite authors. When you read Looming Tower, it's just, what the enraging part is that all of the tools to kill Bin Laden and to know exactly what was going on, they existed in 1999. Mm-hmm. It's just that the government fucked the entire thing up.
Yeah.
They didn't talk to each other, CIA, FBI. I think that was probably the high water mark for Bin Laden. It was the high water mark for Al-Qaeda. At the end of the day, these were actually mostly idiots. We basically decapitated all of them.
Yeah.
They haven't had the ability to do that for a long time. So some sort of like mass casualty attack, I'm skeptical. I mean, we also don't have the same like charismatic figures that we had in the 2010s, which were inspiring a lot of these lone wolf jihadist attack. So Anwar al-Awlaki, he was killed in 2011 in the drone strike.
He's a U.S. citizen, by ISIS, the way.
That's the thing is, at the time, I remember like, oh, fuck that guy. But now I'm like, oh, well, that's pretty guy. Exactly. No,
But I mean, to be fair, the military folks were more than happy to do it because he was the one that radicalized Nadal Hassan, who did the Fort Hood shooting.
Of course.
Right.
So,
I mean, you know, but you don't make the rules for the best case scenario. You make them for the worst case scenario. That's why the Patriot
and
Act
his son
is bad.
His son.
Oh, yeah. His son's still around.
Like, his son was like 14 or something like that. I think he was killed too, though.
Oh, yeah. He was in the first strike. Yeah. They killed his son the first one at that wedding, but they missed him and then they killed him later. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think we also killed another one of his children. Crossfire, to be fair. Like, I'm not blaming the guys whatsoever. But remember that SEAL raid in 2017 in Yemen? It was like the first week of Trump's presidency. And that was another AQAP raid, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. But more what I'm getting at is these like Zarqawi, like, you know, Zarqawi or Al-Waqi, or I forget who the ISIS guy was, who was also the equivalent of this. Anyway, they're all dead.
Baghdadi.
Yeah, it was him, but there was another guy. He was like the propaganda.
I forget his name. Baghdadi's the one that killed himself up in the cave.
Yeah.
Correct.
This thing of the government having all the tools and information and mishandling, this just happened. So I would be surprised if you haven't heard this story. I don't know if you've heard it from anybody that's that has any actual info on it, but the story is from a former defense official. It first came out that, and we talked about it on the show already, that the U.S., the JSOC specifically, had this suicide bomber's location. They knew when and where and how he was going to attack, and had a Predator drone on him, and were requesting clearance to fucking fire a missile at him and kill him. That is all 100% true. I have verified this through three separate JSOC people in three different branches of the military that have nothing to do with one another, one of whom is in the goddamn room.
Right.
When they requested clearance to shoot this motherfucker out. So that's a big problem, that because of whatever deal Biden made with the Taliban, and the prevailing theory amongst my group of friends now that are half civilian, half in the military or intelligence community still, is that just like we funded the Afghan government for a long time, we're going to have to fund the Taliban government for a long time. And that's why, one, Joe Biden was so sure we would get all of our American people out. Mm-hmm. Two, why he gave them that list of names. So we're basically setting up a deal to ransom these motherfuckers, right?
Yeah.
And then the presumption has to be that the Taliban brought that to the table. Like, they made that a point. Like, hey, we'll do this, but you have to pay us the money you've been paying the Afghan government this whole time.
Right.
Look, I don't give a fuck what happens to Afghanistan, frankly. Because we can just go to Peru, we can mine lithium down there, and they can mine their business. We can go back to Monroe, where we're just a hegemon for the Americas. That's fine. Let's do that. But giving them fucking money? Fuck that.
Right.
I mean, look, if they want to put a nuclear weapon inside of one of those pallets of cash and detonate that shit, like not even every pallet, just every fourth pallet or so, right?
Now you're going back to what I wanted originally. Yeah. So, I mean... That would have been better 20 years ago.
At least give them a chance. Like, you just drop the pallet in the middle of the fucking desert.
Yeah.
And there's a 25% chance it fucking goes boom.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Let's play the lottery with these guys.
I'm with you. Sagar, you know, with this story, obviously Republicans are going to hang on this all the way into the 2022 midterm elections here. How do you think that shakes out? I'm curious, is your prediction?
I also want to know what your prediction is with this whole... Like, it seems like a lot of Republicans right now are making moves that don't make sense politically right now. Like Abbott with the abortion thing here in Texas. That was a bad political move this time. But there's been a couple of them. I want to know what your thoughts are on that as well.
So I went in, I looked today. So it's hard. So Biden right now, last big poll I saw of him, has him at 39% approval, his worst of his entire presidency. And like I said, for always add in like an extra six for Republicans. So I think he's sitting really low.
I mean, even but 538 has him at 45% approval. And that's
there
that,
you go.
Yeah.
So it's probably 38.
And they were off in the election by what? About seven. So you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like there you around that 35 mark, which is a disaster. Mm. But if you actually go down in the crosstabs, Afghanistan's like 8, 9 in
terms
of priority. It's
always the economy, right?
Exactly. It's the economy. So I think Biden is sunk because of COVID. I really do. I think Biden he was elected for one reason, because he wasn't Trump, right? Yep. The number one reason that people said they voted for Biden was because he was not Donald Trump. 2/3 of the people who voted for him, they wanted him to, number one, get the pandemic under control. Mm. Number two, get the economy under control. Neither is happening. We just had the biggest jobs miss in like the last 10 months, just in August.
Yeah, and his people are cruising around bragging about the job. We've added 4 million jobs since. Yeah. Dude, there are 11 million open jobs in this country right now.
Exactly.
We got a problem, bro.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to work. We've got open jobs. We have a wage problem. Mm. We also have a problem whenever it comes to the regulation in public health, I think, is number one. Because, Delta and listening to Fauci and Walensky and now pushing the vax mandates, you are asking for big trouble here, man. Like that's and look, the numbers bear it out. All America wanted him to do was get a vaccine to people who wanted it, then move on. Yeah. That's what everyone wants. They support some, you know, little mitigation mostly, but outside of where I live in the cities, nobody wants this shit anymore. Mask mandates, vaccine, schools in mask, all this. Pile all of that together, and what do you get? You get the feeling of, I voted for Biden and not that much changed. I'm saying for the people who did vote for him, right? Mm-hmm. That's his problem. He's got all these people who voted for him for one reason, and they still feel like they're locked down, like it's chaotic, like it's still tense. There's still culture war, all of this nonsense. So I think he's going to get absolutely clobbered in the midterms. Also, his major legislation is going down like flames right now because of Joe Manchin and all of that. So it's basically turning into Obamacare 2.0. Nobody knows what the fuck is in it. It's really big. It's going to be like a big thing. And honestly, all anybody wanted from Obama was let's get out of Iraq and let's get the economy under control. And he couldn't do it. And it's basically the same thing with Biden. So I look at it and I just say the number one reason why Biden is losing is Delta. It is interesting what you're saying about the abortion thing, because I agree with you. Politically, it's a problem. And the reason why is that in terms of the polling, 6-week ban, very dicey in terms of like where exactly it all is. I also have this, you know, here's the thing. Only 3% of people in 2020 voted because of abortion. 3% right. said it was their number one. Almost 90% of those people voted for Trump. So it's really not at the top of anyone's list until it is. Yep. So for a long time, Roe versus Wade made it so that most Democrats just don't give them a shit about an abortion. Mm. But if you're going to force it to the table, especially where you guys are in Austin, you got all these new arrivals from California, New York, you know, Arizona, whatever. They're all about to register to vote, man. And I think that's going to be a big problem in 2022. So I would say in Texas, it's probably going to change the politics there more than anything. And, you know, a guy, Matt Continetti, he wrote a very good column recently, which was the issue for the Republicans now on the Texas abortion law is now every national Republican is going to get asked about it.
Yeah.
And so you know, increase the likelihood of what? Of the Todd Akin legitimate rape moment. All you need is one fucking moron in like Wyoming to say something stupid and then it's over, right? Yeah. It's like, that is where I could see some benefits for Democrats. But honestly, I think the overwhelming feeling right now in the country is how the this is still going on with COVID.
Yeah.
Like, how is this still happening? Even for the people who are actually crazy with the triple masks and all of that, like, they're mad at Biden for not doing more than the people, I would say the majority of people, who don't want lockdown, mask mandate, restriction. They just want total back to normal. Those people are not getting what they want. So he's not pleasing anybody. I think it's just a general feeling of like chaos in the air. And I think it's going to nuke him in 2022.
Taking a position when it comes to forcing people to do shit is almost always a lose-lose. Because
100%. Yep. Yeah.
The vast majority of people just want to be left alone, regardless of what they believe. And only crazy people. Right. Like it's Karen's, it's busybodies, and they're all hated, and but it's a small minority of people, but they are the most active of all the people. Right. It is a fucking minefield, and why walk through it?
I don't understand. Like,
Joe Biden should have fired Fauci the first day he got in office, and he wouldn't have taken any heat for it. He could have just said, I want to start out with a fresh administration.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a massive fucking mistake by him, because this dude, now we find out last week, oh man, he is not the most honest
person,
liar. I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, he's straight up lying about fucking spending US government dollars against federal law to do this dangerous research on the very virus that has taken over the world for the last 2 years. And he's still there. He's still fucking doing press conferences and shit.
He's everywhere. The media loves to have him on. I mean, Jesus Christ, this guy cannot get enough camera time.
Who do you think is in charge at the White House right now? Because it sure as shit is not Biden, right? There's no fucking way. And it's not Harris either. I don't believe that. She doesn't have those.
It's not Harris.
She doesn't have the juice for that.
It's probably Ron Klain. Maybe. He probably runs it. The chief of staff.
Yeah.
He's very competent. He's been in the White House for a long time. You know, and when I say competent, I didn't say it's a good thing. But you know what I mean? I'm more like he's good at getting what he wants done. I look at these like operator guys. He's got a lot of Obama people. They all know where the bodies are buried. They know how to work the government. The bureaucracy's already on their side, so they're at a huge advantage whenever it comes to, you know, any sort of Republican president. But the Fauci thing, I do not get it, because like you said, I mean, we know he lied to Congress. I did a whole thing on it today. It's definitive, like smoking gun proof. Yep. Absolutely, by his own definition, lied to Rand Paul under oath while he's before Congress. And he's done it twice now. And the media is completely on his side. I mean, even today, Jen Psaki, right before I came on here, I was just checking. She got asked whether whether the administration had a response. She goes, oh, well, you know, NIH has refuted that reporting. That's it? That's all? Like, yeah, you have nothing else? She says that Dr. Fauci's job is completely safe. And, you know, it's going to be, right? CNN had him on the day after that story broke, and they didn't ask him a damn question. And he never will get asked anything. Anytime I've tried to get an interview with him or others, they don't even respond, right? So, like, they'll never put him in a position where he's even asked about it. And then the only time he is when Rand Paul has to quiz him before Congress, and he just lies. But here's the thing. If the Democrats in the Senate don't want to refer him for a perjury charge, it doesn't matter. So it's not a lie, right? So it's just like you can completely get away with this stuff. But I do think that justice is going to be served. I really do. I mean, the Dems right now on every generic, even the Democrats. So there's something called the DCCC, which is like the effort to regain or to keep the House. Their own head said that on the generic ballot that the Democrats are losing by 6. And once again, you know, if they're losing by 6 in the poll that they're willing to say publicly, add 4 to 7.
Actually, I would say they're losing by 10. I'm signed up for pretty much every lefty email list there is, because it's just, I wake up in the morning and it's literally the first thing I look at and I just cackle. Like, they've gotten so bad at messaging over the last couple, because they have nothing good to say, really. I mean, I don't really give a fuck about one side or the other here, but I got one from this morning. It was from the DCCC, actually, and it was from Pelosi, right? You know how they changed the sub or the two line, so it looks like somebody else or whatever. It's from Pelosi, like, oh, we're down in the polls by 6. I got that email this morning. It's fucking hilarious.
I'm like, yeah, and so that's the thing.
But it's always just begging for money, right? That's why they're just begging for money all the time.
Yeah, and I'm the same way, because, you know, coming from Hollywood, all the fundraisers and all that stuff, I still get the emails to go. And the reason why is, like, a buddy of mine got super rich, like, overnight, and he bet that he could take a picture with the president.
I'm not even kidding. Look at this.
Yeah.
It says, as of 11 a.m. breaking, Republicans take House lead by 6%. Could you send us some money?
Can you send us some money? Yeah.
Chip in $5. What about 100?
Yeah. There was a buddy of mine who got super rich, like, overnight producing this movie. I'll leave it out of that. But he goes, I can take a picture with the president probably in like 2 weeks. And I was like, all right, done. $25K. Mm-hmm. And I get to take a picture with him and Obama. And that's really all it costs. Yeah. But I'm still on those mailers as well for that exact reason. I won't delete them because I want to know what's going on, and I want to know what they think privately, because what they'll do is they'll start off with these luncheons. And that'll be kind of loose and be like, oh, do people like her or him? Let's see how much money we get from this one lunch, and then roll that into a dinner and then a meet and greet and everything else. And, you know, with that, the Newsom thing, I've been flooded with it, and I don't know where the next one goes to. Like, because they haven't been pushing anybody else in all these other states. What other states and places are you looking at in particular here?
Yeah, do you think
Virginia,
that
Virginia?
Yeah. I want to hear about that, and I also want to hear if you think that the 2020 midterms, instead of about Biden, are going to become about Newsom and fucking DeSantis. Is it going to be a fight over their likability?
It almost never is. It's usually totally national. It's possible, though, only because DeSantis is such a national figure. I got all eyes on Virginia, covered it today. So Virginia is always a bellwether because it is an off-year election right after the presidential. So it's like the first one. Bob McDonnell, he won in 2009, right after Obama, and he was a Republican.
Yeah.
That presaged the Republican wave, right? 2010. Ed Gillespie, he lost big time in 2017. That previewed the 2018 Democratic wave. So this is the one where I've been watching it obsessively, all, you know, caveats included. But look, dude, Glenn Youngkin put out an internal poll just yesterday showing him only down by 2 points. Now, 2 points in Virginia is crazy. And I actually played one of his ads on our show today because it was totally the perfect message. It was in the grocery store. He was like, everybody can notice prices are going up here in the grocery store. Virginia is one of 13 states which taxes groceries. If I'm elected, I'll abolish that tax. And I was like, man, that is a fucking great ad. That is a great ad, because it's one of those just people are go, hey, it's bullshit that we tax our groceries, right?
Right.
And the thing that he's trying to do, obviously, is distance himself from Trump. And it's because, you know, if you guys know DC, we've got Northern Virginia suburbs who are like the worst type of liberal. They're like the suburban Karen, nine masks, you know, like just thank you, Dr. Fauci sign, Black Lives Matter, refugees welcome.
But also somewhere out right there, there's a Polaroid of them in blackface from college, right?
Yeah, correct.
Almost always.
Yeah.
Also, if a black person ever actually moved in that neighborhood, they would freak out and they would like call a neighborhood. Anyway, you know, their hypocrisies are well known. Yeah. So like, but he's got to convince those people to vote for him, or at least not come out and vote for Terry McAuliffe, or maybe split it like 50-50. You combine that with a general dissatisfaction on the lockdown, because he's been talking about the small business mandates, trying to keep lockdowns, mask mandates in schools, which is something real energized. Because this is the other thing, which is that midterm and off year elections, it's all about who is the most energized. And right now, this actually just came out yesterday, Biden's increasing opposition, as in the people who are really, really, really pissed off about Biden, coronavirus, whatever, it's increasing dramatically over the last couple of months. Those are the people, just like in the Tea Party in 2020, that's how you have a big wave if you combine it with apathy. So right now, what reason do you have to go out and vote Democrat for Virginia governor? Like, just not really. You know, it's not like a big thing. Yeah, the pandemic still sucks. Biden's not doing a very good job. You're not like, I'm going to affirmatively come out and cast my vote. But if you're one of those people who's like, screw lockdown, screw Matt, I don't want my damn kid wearing a mask in school. I'm sick of this shit. All of this, those people are going to crawl over glass to come and vote. So they may be looking very close at that.
They may be even madder now, because as of about 10 minutes ago, the AP released a story that says President Joe Biden to mandate all employers with more than 100 workers to require COVID vaccinations or weekly virus tests. The new requirement would affect as many as 100 million Americans. They also said that 17 million workers at health facilities will have to be vaccinated, and they will not allowed to be like substitute for testing. The requirements are part of blah, blah, blah.
Good luck. This, how does that set up, Dana, a showdown with the Supreme Court? Or what do you do?
I don't think you can. Is an executive order powerful enough to enact something like that? I'm not sure about that. That's a good question.
So I'm looking right now. It says that all employers will be required. I think it's going to be. So I'm trying.
It depends on the enforcement. Now go ahead. It depends on the enforcement mechanism for how.
Here it is. It's an emergency rule from the Labor Department that will require all businesses with 100 or more employees to be vaccinated or tested. I don't know. That's going to get struck in court, I think, almost immediately. It's almost, if not struck, what will happen is the same thing that happened under Trump. Some like Texas judge will be like, absolutely not. And they'll kick it to the Supreme Court, and we'll find out in like 6 months, maybe 3 months. But
I don't know. The Supreme Court would knock that down pretty fast. I mean, they are able to they're able to take up cases. And look, they, regardless of what you think about this abortion shit in Texas, the reason that they knocked that down was procedural. It wasn't because they didn't rule on the case. They were like, you guys fucking don't go do your fucking work.
Right.
And then come back. That it must be like a district attorney getting a case from police that with like just a bunch of bullshit in it. You know what I mean? Like,
I can't
do anything with this.
Yeah.
But anyways, they can take up shit, you know, whenever the fuck they want, technically. So I think this one would get ruled on pretty quickly, right? I mean, they're not going to let this happen.
I would definitely skip the line versus a gay couple on a wedding cake.
They can't request cases, though. It has to go through some level of federal court and then a fucking, what do you call it? Court of Appeals. Like, I don't know where this is going to go first. I mean,
it starts at the district court, then appeals court, then SCOTUS.
If you're a Republican right now, or a conservative, or just somebody that doesn't like this shit, and you're trying to get involved in starting the rebuttal to this, definitely do it in a place that has a friendly court of appeals. Don't do it in fucking California and get the Ninth Circuit. You know what I mean? Be smart.
Yeah.
But once in your life, be fucking smart. God, I think
Texas is. What is it, Texas? Fifth Circuit?
It's fifth or seventh.
I know the ninth is in California.
Ninth is the worst one.
The worst,
including Hawaii. Those people are especially the bad.
That's why I left. I work for immigration with Homeland Security doing intelligence work, and I left because of the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah.
Because ICE would not accept any of our cases for prosecution for all kinds of shit, like getting into the country fraudulently, hiding your old fucking criminal history, all this stuff we sent up. They're like, well, if we take this to court and lose, then it creates bad case law in the Ninth Circuit because they kick back a bunch of our stuff a couple of years ago. So I'm like, what, we just don't do anything here then? Sounds like the government, doesn't it? Shit.
Yeah. And then it also says Biden's about to deliver a 6-step plan on the pandemic.
Well, this is one of the steps.
Oh, great.
The other stuff, I think, is through the Department of Education, or one of the other steps is Department of Education and wiping out challenges to mask mandates and stuff like that. So it's going to get, this is going to be a very interesting weekend. I'm surprised they didn't wait until tomorrow afternoon to announce all this shit, because usually that's when you dump your fucking
Friday,
bad
yeah,
news,
Friday
right?
afternoon, yeah.
See, this is the thing, though. I think he wants their theory on this is that this is going to make it look like he's got a handle now on the pandemic. They know his center of gravity is the pandemic. That's what it's all about. That's the entire election. That's his future. So, look, he believes that mass vaccination or increasing the vax mandate and more is going to put a stop to that. But I don't, number one, see evidence. But two, I just think social division wise, I mean, this is the worst thing you can do. I went and I looked at Kaiser Family Foundation survey of people who are unvaccinated, and 40-something% of people said they would quit their jobs if they were forced to do so. So now what? You know, like, okay, now this is something that, you know, when people quit their jobs, you don't have a lot of levers left in order to try and do something. Then what are you going to do? You're going to throw people in prison? Obviously not. So you're going to have a mass, like, under vaccinated class. Look, I am just of the opinion of very much like, if you want it, great. And if you don't, okay, that's on you. So be it, man. Let's move on.
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. I said that about 3 weeks ago to Anthony Scaramucci. We had him on the show. And he didn't like it. He's like, you're a fucking Russian agent. You're part of the problem. I told him, fuck yourself. I have, like, no idea. Just do what you want.
Yeah.
Do what you want. He like tried to bring up, people keep trying to bring up polio and the measles and smallpox. Motherfucker.
It's not the same. Yeah.
Smallpox had like a fucking 30% mortality rate, I think. Even the measles, which is the least dangerous out of all of these, for children, it was 2-5%. But if you're an adult and you got measles, it was 15-30% mortality rate before vaccination. We're talking about 0.3% right now or something like that, right? Get fucked. Are you kidding me?
And I think the other one here is because isn't Trudeau up for election in 2 weeks in Canada as well?
Yeah,
and
those guys that's have been a locked, big one. I'm watching that.
Same. And those guys have been locked down forever. I don't know that they've been let out of their house since this started. Is that another one that you've got an eye on as a predictor of how this is going to shake out? Because, you know, he was another beloved guy, like in Obama, of like, oh my God, Trudeau's amazing. This is great. And he looks great in pictures. What do you think is going to happen to that? Because I think we're a couple weeks out from that.
I'm not sure. You know, he put out something really interesting today where he said that if you are a foreigner and you own property in California, they're just going to start taxing you for keeping it empty. And I was like, that's interesting. That's something I would not expect from they have a big problem with this, especially with the Chinese, because a lot of Hong Kong money came in and bought up like most of Vancouver. All of that being said, this is probably piss off people who are watching. Here's the truth. Non-American Westerners are like pretty compliant. You know, whenever it comes to lockdown. Look, I was in France like a month ago. They were mostly fine with the vaccine mandate. Like, a lot of people are trying to be like, there are protests. But like, dude, like, I was in Paris and most of them didn't give a shit. And I was in rural France and like they're like, here's my pass. Like they call it like Le Pass Sanitaire or whatever. Australia, dude, like
that seems like a different case, right?
Yeah.
Well, not really, though. I mean, they had some protests, but again, like, most of their population kind of supported it. I think Canada's the same. Like, we are uniquely, kind of free in our way. And they always get so mad whenever I say that, but I think it's a good thing. I'm like, look, we're just better than you. You know, we have a lot more of a sense of, about who we are and much more skepticism. But unfortunately, a lot of these countries are a lot more okay with central authority than we might like to think, even though they are in the West. Like, Europeans are pretty compliant.
Well, I mean, how difficult was it for Hitler to gain patronage from other fascist-minded people in the 40s? I mean, come on, man. Like, Mussolini put up a fight like this. He was like, no, quit it. All right, fine. We'll fucking go drink.
Yeah,
I don't care. It took him like 10 seconds.
Amazing. Look, you've been awesome. This is one of my favorite shows we've ever done. Now is the point in the show where we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
Ooh, it's going to be such a stereotypical one. But dude, Joe Rogan, I got to say, I mean, the podcast king. It's just funny because I listened to the guy whenever I was like way before anybody knew the hell I was. Like I was like going to school and like on the metro, just like pissed off and like underpaid. And honestly, man, like a lot of the stuff around fitness and just like exposing me to all these different people. I can't tell you how many people I've met or have listened to. People like Andrew Huberman or, you know, even Evan Hafer. Like I wouldn't have even known about these guys if it wasn't for Rogan. So shout out to the guy. He's also just one of the nicest people who's out there.
Serious question. Did he change your life? Because in all honesty, full disclosure, that's how I found you was through Rogan. You crushed on Rogan. And I listened to that interview and then I started following you afterwards. Did he change your life, you think?
No question. I mean, literally no question. But dude, people come up to me on the street. Like I never thought that was ever going to happen. I'm like, holy shit. Like this is crazy. Number one way is, oh dude, I found you from Joe Rogan. Oh man. I heard you on Joe Rogan. So he not only changed my life, like before I met him, but like just being on a show and he's just so, you know, he's so generous and he'll just shout us out for, like all the time for just cause he can. I mean, and look like he legitimately believes in us, which just means a lot, but there's nobody else who like took us to a different level out other than Joe. It really was like a life-changing event in terms of what happened.
Well, I mean, it was good that podcasting as an industry started off with people like Marin and him and
Carolla,
because they were all three dudes that are, I would say, uncancelable. Unless you do something super egregious, they're just going to be like, go fuck yourself. Dude. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to get embarrassed out of saying what's on my mind. So go fuck yourself. And that was really important for this new independent media industry, for sure. And to be honest, a lot of people have made quite a bit of money off of it as well. So it tells you two things. One, that marketing people don't actually have a soul. Because they all talk about lefty shit in public, but they all fucking pay on the back end.
They'll take your money, or they'll take your audience. They'll sell it, if they want.
But the other side of that is what you were talking about—the difference between Europe and America, or even just that entire everywhere except for America. To be honest, there is a deep-seated, not need, but a fervent fucking animalistic desire for liberty. And every time any kind of bullshit starts to pop up, that's why people are so hyperbolic here. That's why they say crazy things like, oh, this guy's a Nazi or whatever, because their bar for fucking with me is real low. You know what I mean? And that's a good thing too, because that is the, I say this all the time, independent fucking entrepreneurship, right? And liberty, the freedom to say and do and think what you want, is the ultimate inoculation to tyrannical bullshit. It's the only thing that's worked throughout all of human history. And it's something that has to persist. So when somebody comes and tells me, when they try to take your voice away, so tell you what you can and can't say and when and where, the next step is they come for the money, right?
Yeah.
Means of production, or on the fascist side, corporatism. And the next thing they come for is your fucking life. People need to wake the fuck up. Yeah. Right. We're in big trouble right now.
Yeah. And it's great. We have guys like you who are out there, because I think the reason why you're so successful and your show is so popular is because you were not only likable, but you're sensible. The way you look at both sides of an issue, is not, you know, in your face and not like us. We're fucking assholes over here, but you're a likable guy. Like, you'll get invited to the parties. We won't.
No, I'm an asshole. I just don't show it. You know?
Well, thanks for being here. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Breaking Points on YouTube, eSager, Twitter, Instagram, all of that.
Awesome. Awesome. Look, you have a standing invite anytime you want to come back. It's been an absolute joy. For Sager, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.